You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Let's hear from one of the veterans on the Cleveland Browns. What is he, Matt Wilhelm?
A veteran!
A veteran, a Pro Bowler, a future Hall of Famer, Joe Thomas.
You know, I just asked Cam Irving about the difference of being just dedicated to one position this year at center. Can you make any observations about what kind of center he's going to be for you?
He's doing a really good job right now. He's got to keep improving, keep getting better, but I think people are feeling really comfortable with him in the middle. It's really tough as a rookie to learn any position, much less try to learn five positions at once. So he's a really smart kid. He's got a lot of ability, obviously, and I think we're going to see a lot of good things from him this year.
Joe, we've seen three right tackles with the first team offense in nine practices. So I think on the outside, we think, you know, that could be a concern, you know, trying all these different guys. How do you view that situation?
Well, I think it's no surprise we're trying to find who's going to be the starting right tackle. And like you mentioned, there's been three guys out there kind of battling for the spot. I think Austin Pastour did a really good job yesterday. He's the guy that's got the most experience. Greco was hurt at the beginning of camp, so they bumped Austin to guard initially. And I think now that Greco has come back, I think we'll probably settle with Austin, I'm guessing, at the right tackle for the time being.
What do you like about Pastour? I know you got to know him a little bit last year.
He's just a tough, hard-nosed guy. He's got a couple years of starting experience under his belt, and I think that's huge in the NFL. To be able to have some game-time experience, it's invaluable because things happen really fast, and there's a lot to learn in your rookie season. So having a guy with some experience out there will be really important.
Is it important to pick the best five starting with game one of preseason, or not important?
All things being equal, it's obviously important, I would say. You want any time you're putting an offensive line together to find the best five guys, and that's kind of our search right now, and I think we're getting closer to finding those best five guys, and hopefully we'll have them comfortably in place by week one. And that not always happens, especially with injuries and the way the NFL goes, but that'd be the goal.
Is this the first time, Joe, that you've been in even this far in the camp when you didn't know who the five guys are?
No, there's been seasons where a lot of guys were rotating through. I think back to Eric Mangini's first year, and I was the only guy that was the starter based on how training camp went. I mean, we had Hank Fraley and Alex Mack were fighting for the center position until like week one, and even our guards were kind of up in the air, our right tackle. So it's not uncommon to have position battles and have things unsettled, especially this early in camp. We haven't even had our first preseason game yet.
And now that it's official with RG3 going into the season as the quarterback, how do you feel about that position with him at it?
Rob's done a great job so far. I think he's done everything we've asked of him as a team, and he's been the leader that we'd all hoped at quarterback, and I think he'll bring a dimension being able to run the ball that few quarterbacks in the NFL have. So I think there's a lot of optimism with Robert back there at quarterback.
So how do you
you've been through so many coaching changes. Like, do you say, well, here we go again, or – you know, do you take a, let's see what this guy has to offer, or how do you do that, you know, in your mind?
Well, I think you're always cautiously optimistic with a new coaching staff, but I think it's always easy to fall back on, I've got to focus on getting my job done, because in the end, that's really the only thing that I can control. So that's always easy to fall back on, but I can say I think every person on this team is really excited about having Hugh as the head coach. I think he's shown the leadership, the attention to details, and understanding of roles as a head coach, that we've got a heck of a head coach in Hugh Jackson.
That's Joe Thomas, and you can tell the veteran excited about what he's got in head coach Hugh Jackson, also offering what I would say is a pretty strong endorsement of Austin Pastor at right tackle. And he's a guy that you and I like. I like him probably because when he was out there, it seemed like the running game got going at a different level. You could see this was for a power run game. This is a guy that likes to block downhill, use his physicality. He's a mountain of a man at over 6 feet, 7 inches tall. He looks like he could have a second career in the WWE. I also like the fact that while it's neither here nor there, he's been grandfathered in to be one of the players that are allowed to wear those cool visors that are kind of incandescent. So I think that's cool. He's got the long hair. There's a lot to like about Austin Pastor.
You know what I love about him, and it goes back to last year, as you mentioned, is he's got a mean streak in him. He's a nasty football player. And I think for a line, while I know it's a little bit different than it was last year with Cam Irving stepping in with the departure of Alex Mack, they were a little soft at times. And I think Alex Pastor brought in a little nastiness to that offensive line. Joe Thomas has to like that. And I think one thing, Nathan, that we can discuss is, for a right-handed quarterback like we are, you become a right-handed offense. And that means in some cases, while the offensive right tackle will have a tight end lined up next to him, which in some cases in run can protect you with some of the combo blocks, or you know if Gary Barnes is going to like maybe bang or check that outside pass rusher in some cases, and it creates a little bit of doubt in the defense's mind, so you don't have to have. And that's the same way that we can protect Spencer Drango or Sean Coleman if they win that position as well.
A little chicken wing. A little chicken wing. Boom! With a little bit out there. I thought that was interesting. He obviously is impressed with Hugh Jackson. We've heard that from him. And to me, when Joe Thomas comes out, Joe Thomas picks his words very carefully. When he comes out and says that he believes it is very, very different, that resonates a lot with me, and I know it resonates with the other players in the locker room, and I think they've done some cool things, and Hugh Jackson is a guy that likes to check in with his veterans and has like a leadership council. They talk, and I think that that's a really important thing. And as a player, when you've got the guy that, you know, when you look around this locker room and you can say to yourself, all right, there is one surefire Hall of Famer here. He's practicing more than we've seen him practice in the past. He's excited about what's going on, is incredibly positive. How far does that go in terms of motivating the rest of the locker room?
Well, I think it goes very far. And I think, you know, for a lot of different reasons, because I know, and we haven't been overly critical, but I think, you know, you look at players like Joe Thomas, you look at elite players that play, you know, on bad football teams. In some cases, you may think, and I don't know this to be true, you may think they get comfortable with the losing. And so if I were in Joe Thomas' shoes, and I think you said, you know, you can hear it in his voice, you can hear it in how committed he is, not saying he's never been not committed in the past, but there's a pep in his step. There is an optimism to the way he speaks and the way he practices, and it has a lot to do with Hugh Jackson, that I know pages have been turned time and time again, that he really feels like this is the finality of the changes that are happened throughout his career, that Hugh Jackson will in fact be his last head coach.
Yeah, I hope that's the case, because that means he's here for a little while longer. Right. Hugh Jackson is here for the long haul. One of the things we all want to see is kind of that continuity there. And it was also good. I thought he was very positive as well, just on RG3 being named the starter. He's done what he's needed to do. He's been the leader from day one, and he's earned it with his play. To me, those are exciting things when you look at this Browns football team and what you want to get out of this season. And look, maybe he's a guy. Talking about RG3, you know, I was looking. Somebody listed the starting quarterbacks in the NFL. Do you know that RG3, I was shown a graphic of this, so I don't know that if it's fully official, but RG3 is on pace to be one of the 10 youngest starting quarterbacks in the NFL. So this is not an old guy stepping in here. This is still a 26-year-old quarterback with a ton of football ahead of him. Should he get it figured out here with Hugh Jackson?
Of course, and like you said, get it figured out. The same way that I said, you know, Joe Thomas and the optimism that he has for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years here with Hugh Jackson as their head football coach, you've got to have the same thing for RG3, for God's sakes. And I mean, even look at the quarterbacks that RG3 will essentially line up against in this preseason. Aaron Rodgers, I think, is on the cusp of 30 years old. So that's 4 years older. While he's been productive and he's been to a Super Bowl, I get it. But if Hugh Jackson is here, you know, for the next decade, half of that, I would be extremely happy and excited to know that RG3 from age 26 to 31 is here for 5 years of that tenure.
Absolutely. And I mean, you just look in this division, you know, Andy Dalton is 29 years old. in this division. Joe Flacco, looking at Joe Flacco, Wacko for Joe Flacco, was born in 85. That puts him at 31, which is, again, not that old in quarterback terms. But nonetheless, and Ben Roethlisberger is 34. So he would be, by 3 years, the youngest quarterback in our division.
And like I said, I mean, Rodgers is almost 30. Matt Ryan is probably 28, 29, almost 30 years old. Jameis Winston, of course, is the youngest, even just looking at our preseason roster. And then Jay Cutler is well over 30.
Yes. If you look at the guys that will play, Bradford is older, Flacco is older. Tannehill might be right around the same age.
Cousins about the same as RG3.
Should be the same, same draft class.
Brady, although older. Mariota, younger.
Mariota,
Dalton, older. Fitzpatrick, older. Romo, older. Flacco, Roethlisberger, older. Eli, right?
Older.
Tyrod Taylor's probably older. Almost 30.
Older. Rivers, older.
Rivers, older, yeah.
So he'll be the young, basically one of the,
probably third or fourth youngest. You figure Mariota, Cousins the same, and maybe Tannehill the same.
Yeah, so he's right there in our whole schedule.
Correct.
So this is not, it's a different look than some of the guys that have been brought in here before. When Jeff Garcia was brought in after he had peaked and was in with the 49ers.
And Dilfer.
Dilfer was brought in after he'd won Super. Jake Delhomme was brought in after. Josh McCown, quite frankly, brought in after. So this is a guy that actually reached the top of the mountain very quickly, but has got an opportunity now to resurrect his career, and many people are optimistic that he can do just that with Hugh Jackson. When we come back, we want you to hit us up, 216-578-0850. Cleveland Browns Day, let's talk some Browns football before we hear from the venerable Al Saunders at 2:30 right here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm. Coming up in just about 10 minutes, we're going to hear from Al Saunders, the wide receiver coach, who I think deserves a lot of credit. Obviously, the players themselves for the hard work they're putting in. But Al Saunders, the improvement that these guys are showing has been very, very impressive. And I'm not talking about just Terrell Pryor, Corey Coleman, Hollywood Higgins, Ricardo Lewis, Ronnell Hall, Darius Jennings. Go up and down the list. The improvement amongst this wide receiving core has a lot to do with Al Saunders. And remind me, Matt Wilhelm, you said who is the most important person for a young player's development?
Their position coach. Their position coach. And the reason why is because you meet as a collective team, all 53, you know, for a matter of 10 minutes. You may meet and install as a defense 15 minutes to 30 minutes a day. But then when you break up, how you get taught where to line up, how to time things up, how to get off a certain release or a certain coverage, in Al Saunders' case, is taught by that coach. You spend hours watching film, even when the season gets started. You're watching a majority of your film, you know, in your specific meeting rooms, because it's just hard to go through a tape for anybody and go through all 11 positions. Everybody's going to want to see something again. And when, you know, Al Saunders, your linebacker coach, can rewind it and run it again, rewind it, and run it again. And then once everybody, it's like, you move on. So it's just very hard to see everything when you watch film as a group. So you spend a lot of time with your personal coach.
You do. And in this case, it's not like you've got Andrew Hawkins in the room, who is a veteran that people can lean on. But at the same time, Andrew Hawkins has been a kind of a specialized type of player throughout his career. And, you know, the things that Andrew Hawkins does well might not necessarily translate to a guy like Terrell Pryor or an outside receiver.
Correct.
Because he's been primarily an inside guy.
Well, and a majority of the conversations that are being had between a veteran player and a young player may happen, you know, like under your breath, kind of like whispering while coach is running the meeting, if you happen to sit next to a veteran in your position room or on the field after a route or a reminder before you would go out for a series of plays. It's, you know, I guess every room that I've been in, veterans just don't chime in to kind of overthrow a coach's meeting as a coach is running the meeting. The coach is the coach. He runs the meeting unless the coach asks you as a veteran, you know, a rhetorical question that, you know, is easy to answer so that it gets through, you know, the thick head sometimes of the young players who keep screwing it up. But I mean, a majority of the conversations is like, it would be Hawk bringing over Corey Coleman on the sideline after a route and say, hey, when you see that tape, that safety tipping this way, you know, you're going to get X. So you run this read route instead of that read route. little things like that.
Yeah, and that's valuable stuff. And it going is. Against DBs like Tremont Williams, I bet, is valuable for these guys as well. But I think Al Saunders has done a great job in that wide receiver room, and the proof is in the pudding. And to me, what does it say? Because when you're a player, how often, you know, you don't hear as often players talking about their position coaches like you do with this wide receiving core. Any interview we do with any of these guys, they all mention Al Saunders.
Well, now, sure.
Granted, I bring him up a lot, but they still mention Al
you
Saunders.
You do, and I think more so than ever, just you're right in what you're saying, but I think as we interview players and have them on the show and we get their sound, they constantly reference how their coaches are coaching them and how their coaches are pushing them. Everybody, and it's volunteered by the players, which means that these coaches are already, in a matter of 6 months, having a role in their development as Cleveland Browns, and that is a key. And that allows you, after 3 years or 4 years of that same coach developing you to be a certain player, that's when you go knocking on Sashi Brown's door and go, hey, I've been productive for this long. It's time to re-up me. You know, and I think the coach will know that player very well. So I consistently say it. That's my favorite thing about Cleveland Browns training camp at this point, is the amount of coaching that's going on. And it's not falling on deaf ears that think they know better. It's falling on open ears who want to take it in and then regurgitate it out in their performance on the practice field.
Yeah, and you want to see that, and you see these one-on-ones. And let me ask you, when you were a linebacker, and I know you had to go against guys like Antonio Gates and LaDainian Tomlinson, even the Bernard Turner, et cetera, when you were going in those one-on-one matchups day after day after day after day, and if, let's say, they were getting the better of you, which I know wouldn't be for an extended period of time, we're talking about Matt Wilhelm, ladies
oh,
and gentlemen.
Oh, God, come on.
But how does that affect your psyche on either for the DBs or the wide receivers going through that in what we're starting to enter the dog days of camp?
Sure, iron sharpens iron.
We've heard that quote a lot.
That's the best that I can say is, and I know Hugh Jackson, going good against good, or if I were a young player, if I were Ibrahim Campbell, I'd want Gary Barnage every single time in one-on-ones. Randall Telfer, I know you need to get reps, and Connor Hamlet, you need to get your reps, and Bibbs, you need to do your thing. But if I'm Ibrahim Campbell and Jordan Poyer, I want to fight over who gets the rep that against Gary Barnage, because Gary Barnage went to a Pro Bowl. Gary Barnage is going to be the most like what you see on Sundays.
So when you say that, does that mean that the players actually get to dictate that, or the coaches dictate that? Or a combination?
Combination, I would think. Sometimes they're just, it's line up and go. And I think guys naturally fall into line as they go in team settings, which means Barnage is running with the ones, Bibbs is running with the twos, Hamlet with the threes, or Telfer and Hamlet. You know, then they all, so they goes 1 through 4. And however, then it's Poyer, because he's the vet over Campbell. So he would take the first rep against the tight ends, then Campbell, then maybe Raheem Moore.
Sure.
You know, and it did. They fall in line along the depth chart, and that's how you take your reps. And then after those starters, like Barnage might get one rep, or might, you know, do one-on-one, and that's when Hamlet and Telfer and Bibbs and DeValve, if he were to be healthy, would get rep after rep after rep. It's like then Poyer would get, you know, 1 or 2 reps, and then they step out and get, you know, the young guys get a bunch of reps, because they're the ones that need to show these coaches that they get it and they can do it.
Absolutely, and we're going to see some more of those battles out there today in those one-on-ones. 216-578-0850. We got Phil in Brecksville with us. Phil, welcome to the show.
Hey, Nathan, Matt, great job at the shoe. That was pretty cool, that stream.
Thank you. We had a good time with that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I should have caught the football when it came to you, Nathan. That was the only thing.
Which one? On the kick? The kickoff?
Yeah, the kickoff.
I got it off the ground.
All right.
It rolled over.
Hey, Hey, I'm definitely drinking the Kool-Aid about this team. I think for the first time in 20 years, we're on the right track. I think that, you know, I think we're in good shape going forward. But this year, you know, I just have my concerns. I honestly don't think we're going to be able to run the ball very well. I think our offensive line, look, they're not getting any trial by fire, and by the time that they really do get some fire, they're going to be in the middle of the field. So I think we're going to have trouble running the ball. I hope that we're not going to have trouble pass protecting. You know, with the defensive backs, guys, you know, I'm sorry. I know Joe Hayden is a great guy, and he's a great team guy, but, you know, you just got to go with what you see. You know, he got the big contract. You know, he got hurt, okay. Then he had a concussion, which I can't remember ever being concussed, and the whole team he was out. Look, we're one – who knows if he's ever going to be the Joe Hayden he was. And really, we've got unproven guys all over the place, and we don't know if we're going to be able to stop the pass, and I don't think we're going to be able to run the ball. I'm hoping we do both, but that's where I see it.
Yeah, the defense, I think right now, as we said all along, the offense is a little bit ahead of the defense. I actually feel pretty good about our run defense. I feel like our run defense is going to be much better than people are expecting it to be now.
Because it's gap sound.
Just from a scheme standpoint.
Correct.
And because, first of all, quite frankly, the bar is low. We've been the worst run defense in the NFL 2 years in a row. So saying it's better is not really going on a limb. But I do think it is going to be better. And I think my concern right now is the back end. We got to see Joe Hayden out there. I think Joe Hayden is a huge part of how successful this defense will be. And I think he needs to bounce back and regain the form that he used to have.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
If this defense is going to be as good as it wants to be and as the fans want
it
to be.
And the reason why you may say that, and for me to kind of, you know, say that I absolutely believe that to be certain, is because Joe Hayden is not going to be asked to play press man and essentially erase the number one wide receiver off the field as he has in past years. We're playing a different style of defense. It's going to be a Pro Bowl caliber player doing exactly what he is coached to do down in, down out. And, you know, will he be in man press against the number one? Sure. But it's going to be 15% of the time instead of 60% of the time in past years. So I think it's a guy who deserves to, who's great enough to be a franchise player, a Pro Bowl player like Joe Hayden, playing that way within our scheme. He becomes he's a larger piece of our puzzle.
Sure.
But all he is a piece of our puzzle.
He is. I just think when you have your best players playing the best, it rallies everybody
it else does.
And picks them up. And I think they're going to look to Joe Hayden to come back.
He doesn't need to be on an island.
No, he doesn't have to be on an island.
Right.
And you're not going to see that. I mean, last year
right.
we saw things like Johnson Badamosi one-on-one with Larry Fitzgerald, Johnson Badamosi one-on-one with Antonio Brown. We're not going to see that kind of stuff anymore.
No.
I don't think we're going to see that nearly as much. But when you do blitz, you're going to put some pressure on guys. And you want Joe Hayden to be able to go out there and isolate a side of the field when you bring some of those exotic pressures.
And be Joe Hayden.
And be Joe Hayden.
Yes. That's all we need.
That's all we need. That's all we're asking for. One guy who brings it every single day, Al Saunders, apparently leading the team in miles run through training camp. Not bad for a near 70-year-old wide receiver coach. He spoke with the media earlier today, and this is an interview you won't want to miss.
Listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Skirt, Matt Wilhelm. Pedman checking in as well. And now it's time to hear from a man that we've been trying to get. We still haven't got him in studio, but we're going to give you this, which is almost just as good, and that is Al Saunders. Browns wide receiver coach spoke with the media earlier today.
It seems like there's an obvious concerted effort to make Terrell Pryor an every down receiver, not just a gimmicky gadget player. He's listed number two on the wide receiver chart right now. Is that the effort that's being made?
Well, quite frankly, I don't know about any listings, but what I do know is that my job and my passion in this game is to try to make every player that's under my tutelage the best player he can possibly be. It's fortunate when you have someone like Terrell who has worked so hard to make a transition from a quarterback position to a difficult position in the National Football League, which is a wide receiver. And every day we see things that he does better than the day before. He's worked extremely hard through this first phase of football. I think we're all really, really proud and really feel great about where Terrell is. Now, the next step is to play real football.
And what are you looking for in real football? Getting hit and holding on or what?
I look for Terrell to be able to, from a technique standpoint and an assignment standpoint, play like he's played without pads on in a non-contact environment. And that's a real step for everybody. It's a real step for these young rookies. It's a step for every player on the football team, regardless of the position. Is a lot of times when you're learning skills, and now all of a sudden you're against other people, you're against different looks, the speed of the game will change a little bit, and it's just another developmental process for every player, and Terrell is no different. You know, he's going from an environment that's controlled to a degree, to now an environment in Green Bay that they're trying to do some things different than we do on the practice field. The speed of the game will be different. But I've got every confidence that if he continues to work as he has worked up to this point, that this test will just be another one that he passes.
Now, can he be an every down receiver? What he's shown you?
I'm not sure, how that translates. I know this, that he's working as hard as he can to be the best football player he can be. I'm looking forward to seeing how he plays Friday night, and then the next weekend, and the next weekend, and the next weekend, because he's at a point right now. This is really a hard transition for anybody to make. I think I'm trying to think back. Maybe Antoine Randall is the one guy that I've coached that has gone from a quarterback to a receiver and really done an exceptional job. And like I say, we couldn't be any more happier than where Terrell is right now. But he knows he has a lot of things to work on, a lot of things to improve on. And, it's not all going to happen overnight. It's going to take time. This is his first exposure to that position. But myself, personally, I couldn't be any more thrilled with where he is right now.
Did you go position by position, Coleman, a rookie, Pryor, only a couple NFL catches, on and on, the Hawkins coming off an injury. There's kind of an issue or two with every guy in your stable.
I tell you what, it's exciting, really. I mean, working with those guys and the effort and energy they put forward ever since OTAs, the hard work they're doing on the field, watching every one of those guys improve in their technique and skill, and it's a wonderful group. I mean, our meeting room is just phenomenal, and they've all developed great bonds with each other. They help each other. They enjoy working with each other, and you can't teach experience. But what you can teach is fundamentals and techniques and learn how to learn and effort and all those things. We always tell them, there's four things you got to do. You got to know what to do. You got to know how to do it. You got to do it with energy and enthusiasm, and you got to do it all the time. So your assignment, your technique, and your effort and your consistency determine your value. And so every day when we look at practice, that's what we focus on. Every game in preseason, that's what we'll focus on. And the only thing those guys can do is continue to work at the level that they've worked at, and then the chips fall where they may. I told them the first meeting I had with them when the year started, my goal is, first of all, is that every single guy sitting in this room has an opportunity to enjoy a career in the National Football League, some way, shape, or form. There's only so many seats in our boat, but there are a lot of lifeboats out there around the league that they may have an opportunity to fill. And I've always treated everybody like a first-round draft choice. I mean, I treat Corey Coleman no different than I treat our free agent wide receiver Dennis Parks, because to me, that's my job. And my job is to make sure that they do the very best job they can and to watch their improvement. And they're kind of like my kids, maybe my grandkids at my age. But they're wonderful kids, and that's what happens and where everybody ends up. And we haven't even started to evaluate that yet, because we haven't played football yet.
What we talk about Coleman and Pryor all the time. Who are some of the guys that maybe sort of under the radar but are really caught your eye?
Well, quite honestly, I think if you took our roster and looked at every single receiver we have, in my opinion, every one of those guys has the capability of playing in the National Football League. Now, some qualities and some needs are from other teams and from our team will differ. But I think they all have the physical skills to be able, if somebody develops those guys and gives them the opportunity to play, I think every one of those guys in that group have the opportunity to play in the National Football League.
Go ahead, Tony.
Corey Coleman isn't the tallest receiver in the world, but we've already seen that he's a dynamic player. With Odell Beckham and Antonio Brown being less than 6 feet, or right around there, is there a trend back to those guys? Rather than the 6'4", Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a trend back to those guys. I mean, I've had a lot of experience coaching guys like, Charlie Joyner, and he was in the Hall of Fame down there. Andre Rison, Antoine Randall, Santana Moss, Landry last year in Miami. I mean, you don't have to be 6'4 to be a great receiver in this league. What you have to be able to do is you have to change direction, you have to get separation, you have to be able to catch football. And I don't think that there's a marquee on how tall and physical you have to be. When Bill Walsh came into this league and he and I went to the same school, played for the same people at San Jose State, and as it did for Meehl. And Bill developed what everybody considers the West Coast offense. Well, when you look at the players that he had John Taylor, and he had, who's that other guy over there? Jerry Rice, yeah. He had John Taylor and Jerry Rice. And the prototype of that athlete in his system were big physical guys. And the genesis of that system really is slants, hooks, curls, shallow cross, and drive. Big physical guys that can catch the ball inside, you know, against linebacker types, and that can catch the ball in a contested environment, because it's not an upfield vertical passing game. It's more West Coast offense. It's lat, as Bill would say, it's an extended handoff. Well, the priority in that offense, you better have big physical guys, because when you're running routes that you run up the field and come back, you're in an area where, you know, a physical nature is needed, because you're going to be in a contested environment. You know, I'm from the Don Coryell school with Charlie Joyner and Wes Chandler and John Jefferson and Kellen Winslow and those guys, and it's vertical speed, it's separation, it's get up the field, and so it's a different style of play. So when you have guys that aren't big and physical, what you have to do is put a priority on the ability to separate and get speed, and that's what we would do with Corey Coleman. Corey Coleman's a vertical player. Now, he'll learn all those other things, but he's a vertical player. He's got undeniable speed. And what we've got to be able to do is teach him to get out of his breaks with efficiency. We've got to be able to separate laterally as well as we separate vertically. So size, in my estimation, in the receiver position is not an issue. But what you've got to do is devise a system and divide the kind of things that those guys can do so they aren't in contested environments all the time.
Is it all? Makes
sense.
Is a guy like that who depends so much on speed, when he has a hamstring, is that concerning, or is it just part of the game?
For me, a hangnail would be concerning if you have that kind of speed. You know, but you know, our trainers are phenomenal, and you know, he's kept out of practice. Yet he's had a history of soft tissue injuries. He's had 3 or 4 hamstring pulls. He had a groin surgery, you know, recently. So you know, we just want to make sure that he's right and ready to go. He's worked extremely hard. I think if you ask him and his coach that was here from Baylor, he's never worked as hard in his life. He's never had to run consistently as far or as hard. He's never really had to be involved in the running game and be a blocker. So he's learning a lot of different phases of the game. And the most important thing for us is make sure that he doesn't break down physically, so he's unable to do the things that we want him to do when he's healthy. So this is more of a precaution.
Speaking of Baylor, how do you implement Gordon into the practice routine while still developing these other guys and worrying about the season?
Yeah, you know, Josh has been with the trainers doing the physical rehabilitation he needs for his quad injury. He's, from what I understand, that's progressing real well. He's involved in the walkthroughs every day. He's involved in our meetings. And I tell you what, he's a voracious student now. I mean, in the meeting room, he's tremendous. He is absolutely tremendous. He's learning the system. He's doing a tremendous job of studying off the field. I'm really, really excited about how he's approached what we're doing. And our room, when I say our room, the players in that room have really gravitated to him. And I think he feels really good about the players and the people that are in that room with him. So he's been in walkthroughs. He will continue to be in walkthroughs. I'm not sure exactly of what the timeline is for him to be able to be on the field and actually participate. So we'll approach that when we get to it.
By the time he gets into game shape, he'll be going on suspension. So what can we expect from Gordon this year?
I can't answer that. You know, I wish I could. I really don't know. I know that if he's healthy and he is acclimated to what we're doing mentally from an assignment standpoint, there's no denying what his physical talents are. I mean, 1 year in this National Football League, he caught 1,600 yards, I think, in passes, and he went to the Pro Bowl. You know, he's had a little break right now. He might be fresher than he's ever been, so we just got to, you know, make sure he's in the same, you know, path as we are when he comes back, and that's my job to do, and I guarantee he's going to be there.
Are you going to need for Pryor to have a ton of reps in the preseason games to see if he can take the good things he's done out here onto an actual?
Well, every game is different in the preseason, and we'll have an agenda for each and every player. And Terrell's agenda will be dependent on what we've seen of his performance Friday night. We'll have a plan going in Friday, just how much we'll play him, just as we will every other guy. And the next week will be determined by his performance. And we, you know, you can go into a game and intend to throw a guy the ball four or five times, and because of the defense or the structure, he never gets it. Or you go to Ohio State scrimmage, don't really plan to throw it to him a lot, and he catches like 500 balls for 3,000 yards in the first half down there, you know. So that's sometimes hard to judge, but we'll do that on a week-to-week basis.
What he did down there, what did that say to you?
Said that he was really happy to be home.
Now, you've been with so many teams, and you've been a head coach. What's your philosophy? What's the best way to approach these preseason games? Win versus evaluation?
Yeah, that's a delicate question, and I think all 32 coaches in the National Football League sometimes approach it differently. Winning is usually always important, and we always, you know, whether you're playing tiddlywinks or, you know, whatever you're doing, we're competitors, and so everybody wants to win. And generally, the standard bearer is, you know, regardless of who's on the field, we're playing to win, and we expect to win. And but really, the most important thing in preseason is to choose your team. And if you're new staff like we are, is be able to function together as a staff offensively and defensively. Make sure that the things you're doing from a base concept systematically, offensive, defensive, special teams, are in line with the players that you have. So it's a two-edged sword. It's Mike McCarthy will have a totally different objective going into this preseason game on Friday than we will. I mean, those guys have been together for a long time. They've got a pretty established quarterback there. You know, they've got a system that they know real well. It's the same coaching staff for years. So, you know, what we're in all in a learning phase right now with the people that we have. So sometimes it's, you know, the importance of winning is always there, but it's always the most prioritized thing in preseason is pick your team. Make sure that we're doing the right thing fundamentally sound in offense, defense, and special teams, and develop from there. Because each week is a new chapter and tell you how far you've gone.
Where do you get the energy to run around with those guys and just be as vocal and as outgoing as you are with them?
You know, I get asked that a lot, you know, and I don't know that I have any more energy than anybody else. It's just my style. I'm a little bit more animated than maybe a lot of people. I love the players I work with, and for me, when you're in a meeting room and you're watching video and you're lecturing them on how to do things and you're trying to coach them, and all of a sudden they do it, that to me is the most exciting thing. We're teachers, you know, and to think a coach is anything else is really probably not accurate. You know, we're trying to teach players, you know, in our area of expertise, the way to do it right. And when I see someone do it right, it excites me tremendously because I know how important it is to these guys. And I try every day to give everything I've got to them to enable them to achieve their goals. And when I see somebody do something really well, I'm really excited about it. That's just my human nature.
When I asked you about some under the radar guys, like Ronnell Hall, what do you see in him?
I see a National Football League player. I see someone who is very dedicated to his craft. I see someone who has outstanding ability. I see someone who has come an extremely long way in the short time I've been here. There is no question in my mind that Ronnell Hall has an opportunity to play in the National Football League. And you know, we'll find out Friday and the next weekend how he adapts to the game situation. But he's young, he's inexperienced, but he gives me no indication of anything that he's done on the field, off the field, in the classroom, that he couldn't be a player in the National Football League.
Talking about his boy, Ronnell Hall, Al Saunders there. I mean, give me 2 hours of Al Saunders. I love the guy. He sees himself as a teacher. He's got his axioms. And I just love the way that he motivates and sees his job and the way that he's reached these guys. And they believe in Al Saunders, and why not? He's coached a lot of guys that are going to wear gold jackets, and he's the kind of coach that can help these young players make that development that can, you know what, at the end of the day, bring winning, and to the players, get them paid. Stick with Al Saunders. He will help you get where you want to be.
Yeah, and I think if I were a young player, A, you want to hang with guys that have been in the league a long time because they know this business better than anybody else. And B, lean on your coach, because if a coach has been in the league this long, he has done something right. And I think I'm excited. We've been excited for a long time just spending the time with Al Saunders that we have with him in the building well before any players even reported back, before the draft even came. But to give him a talent like Corey Coleman and let him nurture that talent. You add in Josh Gordon, you know, his comments about Josh, and then three other draft picks as well. I think the needle is trending in an entirely different direction at the wide receiver position than it has in a very long time here in Cleveland.
Oh, and it's joyous. It's joyous. It's fun. It's glorious. We'll be back with our final thoughts here. Browns set to take the field again today for training camp, just 3 days before they head to Lambeau Field, the frozen tundra, which won't be frozen. It's only August, but they'll be going there on Friday.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, Mateo, final thoughts here. They get back on the field today. This is probably, you know, Thursday's a travel day. Wednesday's probably going to be more of a glorified walkthrough.
Yeah.
This is the last day to really make an impression. Can guys earn more playing time with their performance today out there on the field? What are you trying to accomplish today?
I think you can change maybe a little bit of perception about you, and I think it's also the reason why I feel that there will be a siren period. It's one more time to create a little bit of urgency in those bubble players, and also to keep, you know, some of your veterans on their toes, to not take anything for granted prior to cranking it up on Friday night.
All right, the Golden Boys are up next for you here. We'll be back again tomorrow. We'll hear from defensive backs coach Louis Chofi on the defensive backfield, something that's got a lot of attention, a lot of eyeballs on it as we get ready for the 2016 season. For Mopedman 4, Matt Wilhelm, Matt Fontana, I am Nathan Zagura saying thanks once again for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850, WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.